Hello and welcome to Better by the Minute Life with Becca. My name is Becca Dukes and I will be your host for the next hour in bringing the brighter side of things in life to awareness and really focusing on the things that we can do to be empowered as individuals, take our health and our life and our finances all into our own hands. And I am super excited to have again with me Dr. Judy Reynolds, who is a graduate of A&M. She is also taught at the university level in nutrition and also has a degree in biology. She has done so much in her lifetime, including a career in manufacturing nutritional foods for animals, specifically horses, but her focus has been turned more towards humans as she has been able to overcome some of her own health issues through nutrition. Dr. Judy Reynolds, welcome back to Better by the Minute Live with Becca.
Hi, Becca. It's great to be here.
I am super excited to have you here because we're going to be looking deep into food and nutrition and the things that we should add to our diet, things that we should avoid, things that we should completely eliminate. And you're going to go over why.
Yes. And this is really one of the fun things to do. If you think about it, there's research going on all the time at universities and private corporations, and they're trying to figure out what the benefits are of certain foods and detrimental effects of other foods. How do we decide what we're going to eat? How do we pick? There's everything out there. There's so much information. The worst part of it is trying to figure out what to do. We're going to go through a list of some things that we recommend and some things that we don't, and then just kind of tie in what the main reason is. The first thing we're going to start out is with the grains, and that's cereal grains. What that means is they're the seeds of grasses. They become the seed that grows into a new grass, and that's what we call our wheat, barley, rye, oats. And there's an interesting thing we've found out fairly recently. You've probably heard of the name gluten or the component gluten. And gluten is a big component of wheat, barley, rye, and oats. But the problem with gluten, it's the wonderful thing that makes our baked goods all stick together so we can have that bread that rises and those, you know, those delicious rolls and all those kinds of things. But the problem is the gluten molecule itself is relatively large. And when it gets into our digestive tract, it goes to our small intestine where we have those little villi, those little finger-like projections for absorption of nutrients. And basically, it is sticky. So it sticks within our intestines. It ends up destroying the normal structure of our small intestine. And you will find, if you go back and look at many, many, many disorders, mostly things of the skin, things of the digestive system, it goes back to that lack of absorption, because we can be taking vitamins and minerals, and if they're not absorbed, our body can't use them. So a lot of different disorders are related to that. So what we do is we say, do not use those grains that are wheat, barley, rye, and oats. And we eliminate most of the grains, or we substitute with grains that do not contain gluten. And that's fairly complicated. So we've got more information about that that we can help you with. So what we're looking at is change a little bit of our normal idea of we need to have bread with every meal and things like that. Then moving on, we're looking at good things to eat for our protein sources. One of those is fish, poultry, and meat. And what happens with those, they are different types of animal products. And as we know, different cultures, because of where they live, they may eat more fish, they may raise poultry, they may be more red meat eaters. Whatever those things are, those are considered to be normal in the human diet, and they can be blended around all the different kinds of meats for whatever you prefer. One of the things that some cultures do a lot of is rice and beans. And the concept there is that rice is a grain, but it does not contain gluten. So that's a good thing. So rice is considered a starch, which is a non-structural carbohydrate source. And then the beans actually are high in protein. So what they're doing in those cultures, Mexico, places like that, they're blending those two so that they're meeting the needs of all three, of some carbohydrates and some proteins, and they've got some fats in them too. There is a recommendation that we avoid peanuts. And the reason for that is that peanuts are prone to have a toxin made by a fungus that can get on the peanuts and actually cause damage to your liver. But other than that, the nuts themselves sometimes get a bad reputation. Your almonds, your walnuts, your pecans, pistachios, they are relatively high in fat, but for the most part, they are healthy fats. So we do want to use nuts within our diets. They got a bad reputation when we were all trying not to eat fat. And really, those are good fats, and they're something we should use in our diet because they're a protein source, a fat source, and they're very low in starches and sugars. And that brings us to when we want to basically not overdo our non-structural carbohydrates, our starches and sugars. And we'll get to that when we get more into the foods that we want to ignore. Now we get to the fruit category, and there are two types of fruits. We can roughly divide them into two parts. The ones that are that contain a lot of sugars, and then the ones that contain less. So we have to look at our fruit labels. And again, that's another thing that we can go through. But things like blueberries, strawberries are more likely to be lower in sugar and starch. And you can tell because when you taste some of these, they don't taste as sweet. And then you look at some other fruits and they're higher in sugars. You can taste that. And what you want to do if you're buying fruits, you want to buy the whole fruit if you possibly can, rather than a canned fruit, because a lot of times they have added sugars. And another fun thing about fruits is that you can flash freeze them or flash dry them, and they retain most of the nutrients. So you can store a big bag of mixed berries or strawberries or things in your freezer, and you've got that to add to smoothies.
Dr. Judy, I love to buy the frozen berries. The blueberries, the strawberries, the raspberries, they seem to have more flavor than if I were to buy them fresh. For me, I think that has to do with the time that they're picked, where you were just talking about flash freezing them. They don't flash freeze them until they're ripe and just picked, where the stuff that we're getting that's fresh has been picked while it's still green, so that by the time it does get to the grocery store, then it is ripe. But for me, and maybe it's just me, it just doesn't have as much flavor. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's exactly right. They have to pick them green, pick just about everything green. Sometimes even colors or chemicals are added to keep them looking like they're ripe when they're not ripe yet, because they have to go from where they're grown to where you're going to buy them at the store. We need to keep that in mind. And freezing, it keeps all, you know, virtually everything. It freezes the water, which preserves them. Or if you, like I said, flash dry them, then you've got everything and you can just add the water back in, you know, as you make your smoothie or whatever you're going to do. So that's exactly what it is. It's about ripeness. The other thing is we want to buy our things close to where they're grown, so they don't have to be shipped across the country. And all of us should really be considering growing some of our own fruits and vegetables and things like that. And we can talk to our county ag services and find out, can I grow certain kinds of fruits or vegetables in my local area, or can I not? So, you know, fun things to be looking at. And the same thing goes with vegetables. We can freeze our vegetables. Fresh asparagus or asparagus that has been frozen is so much better than when it goes in a can. I mean, that's one of those vegetables to me, asparagus. It's just, we grow our own. We grow some enough in the spring for our family. And it's just one of the most delicious things there is. All you do is saute them very low heat in a little bit of butter, add whatever spices you want. And it's just amazing.
I agree. We were very blessed. The homestead that we purchased has asparagus growing here and there. And when I first saw it, I'm like, is that really asparagus? And then we started cutting it and it just got thicker and thicker. And I love, love, love asparagus.
And the other thing I got into a little bit of a tangent with this year was squash. I planted 3 or 4 rows of squash. And my husband and I did an experiment where we siphoned the water from a pond, which they're all over where I live in Missouri. And so we siphoned the water over the pond. And so, of course, then you're getting the water that's got the vegetation in the water, you know, and that you've got some nutrients that way. But we also added some granular minerals to it. But we put a system together where the garden just happens to be on a little bit of a slope. And so we put the system where the water just leaks down all the time. And we got 300 or 400 huge squash that are the most delicious things on the planet. So there are ways to figure out what grows in your area. When I lived in Minnesota, I had kind of swampy land and I was famous for my broccoli. I was even accused of putting it in ice cream, which I never actually did. But find what's good on your land and find the easy way to do it. So that's a great fun thing to do. Okay, another big topic is salt. And I mean, we've been told forever to not eat too much salt because salt causes heart disease and causes all these other things. Well, in fact, limiting your salt too much actually leads to one big thing that a lot of people have problems with. And that is when you don't get salt, salt is sodium chloride, so sodium and chlorine. And in order to digest our food, we need what's called hydrochloric acid in our stomach. So if we actually are low on sodium chloride, which is our chlorine source, we do not make enough hydrochloric acid. And that's how we get heartburn. And so that's one of those things that is completely backwards from what we would expect. What we want to do is salt our food to taste and not specifically limit it. So that's another whole topic where, you know, a lot of research has been done, but it has been proven that the salt intake is not a cause of heart disease.
So let's talk a little bit about salt. Is salt salt?
No, that's a great one.
Any salt.
Right.
There's so many different salts on the market now. What do we need to look at? And why would there be so many different types of salts?
Well, it depends on where it's gotten from. One of the main ways to get what you would call pretty much pure salt is you evaporate the water. You find a salt deposit and you evaporate the water. So you're getting mostly salt. But there are certain places like the Himalayan mountains where you have salt with the other minerals. And that is really a great find because you've got trace minerals. One of these things that there are minerals out there that we don't even understand all the benefits that they have for us yet. We know a lot of them, but we're finding more and more trace elements that are helping us. And so when we buy our salt from a Himalayan mineral source or any salt that actually contains the minerals that were with it, for instance, sea salt. So you'll see all these kinds of things. What you want to do in a situation like that is find out where they're saying it's coming from and what they're saying is in with it. So they should be telling us, yes, it's been verified that it contains these other trace elements and things like that. The other thing that's interesting, because I used to be on a low salt diet for a while because, you know, I believed the hype way back when. And so I used to use what they call light salt, L-I-T-E salt. And that was a combination of sodium chloride and potassium chloride. And as it happens, potassium is deficient in a lot of people's diets. I work with people that are elderly, and quite often they're actually taking a potassium supplement. And so from that, I actually add some light salt or some no sodium salt, which is again potassium salt, because that helps us get our chlorine and it also helps us get our potassium. So there are a lot of ways at looking at salt. These things all taste a little bit differently too. And so you want to look at what your taste is, and then you want to look at what other spices and things you want to use with your food. And spice is just one of the most wonderful things, combinations to go with each type of meal that you're making. So you want to be looking at all of that and, you know, getting a great taste burst along with meeting those mineral needs, those macro minerals like sodium, potassium, and chlorine.
Thank you so much. I know that things just seem to be healthier for you when they are taken in the form that they naturally occur in nature. And I think there is some divine interaction with that and a purpose to be taking things that are not processed and utilizing them as food.
Right, because the whole concept of metabolism is we get, again, a source of a macronutrient. Macronutrient just means starches and sugars, fibers, proteins, fats, and all your major things that you eat a lot of, okay, the major foods. So within those, as they grow, the plant or animal is ending up putting cofactors and other things in with those that just make them easier to digest. I mean, it's just the way nature works. That's why when we remove the, let's say we have a kernel of rice. Okay, it has a big husk. You leave the husk out in the field. You don't see that. But then the rice, most rice is brown. There are some varieties that are other colors, but there's this brown skin. It's actually like the skin on a, if you would think of a baseball or something, that outer part, that is the bran and the germ. And people like white rice. For some reason, they like white rice. So what happens is you take off that skin and you're losing probably 80% or more of the major nutrients within the rice kernel. And that used to be thrown away because so much fat in it, there's 20% fat in that rice bran. So it would be thrown away. Well, a process was developed so that that can be quickly, right at the milling process, it can be stabilized and it'll have over a year shelf life and you can use all those nutrients. So the more we change something because we like the color, we like the taste, or whatever the purpose of it is, we're removing all those cofactors that make the rice more digestible and better for us. And that's the kind of thing that we need to be looking at whenever we are heavily processing things.
So what's the next thing that needs to be added to the good foods list that has been demonized for so many years?
Okay, butter. It was actually fraud that companies that were trying to find a source of man-made petroleum products after World War II, they started demonizing butter and eggs, which had been standard staple foods throughout history. They demonized them, specifically butter, because of the fat content. And so people were told, don't eat it, it's really bad for you. But then after years of people researching and looking at it, the cholesterol does not actually clog your arteries. The major causes of problems with your arteries are you are missing your vitamin C, your selenium, and your vitamin E that make the walls of your arteries strong so that they will not rupture. And then what clogs the holes, if they do rupture, are fats that are heated to a high temperature, like cooking oils. Whenever we are eating a fried food, those fats are unnatural and the high heat changes their molecular shape and our body can't do anything with them. So if they happen to be in the artery, the body will say, whoa, I need to plug a hole and I will use these fats because they're here and I don't know what else to do with them. So that's really what's happening, even though it was blamed on cholesterol. That's not the case. So what happens with butter? Again, it's made from milk, made from cows. It's also possibly made from other dairy animals, like goats is fairly common, especially in some parts of the world. Now, the thing with milk and butter is that it's better if the cows that are making that milk that's becoming butter are actually grazing on grass and are not eating a bunch of commercial corn or mixes and things like that, because what the cow eats actually affects the milk that she's producing. So ideally, we do want butter from a source of a healthy grazing cow. Not always possible the way our lifestyle is in certain parts of the country and certain parts of the world, but butter itself has amazing properties that are healthy. And it's one of those things that we want within our good food list.
I absolutely love the grass-fed butters. And now with butter, you've got salted and unsalted. For me, unsalted has absolutely no flavor. So I always go towards the salted butter. And I know some recipes call for unsalted, but then you add salt. So I figured, hey, a little bit of salt, not going to be a problem because it's something that our body needs, as you had mentioned earlier. Now, you were talking about cholesterol. Let's go into eggs and why eggs are actually good for you.
Yes, actually, eggs contain cholesterol. If we want to look at the two most nutritious and healthy foods in the human diet, they would be eggs and they would be milk, whole milk. And here's why. If you take an egg, in 21 days, you've got a full baby chicken with everything it needs. All of its cells, its beak, its eyes, its feathers, its everything it needs grows from that. That is so incredibly amazing. So we know that when we eat eggs, we're getting all of those components and we're getting them in a relatively good ratio, a basically good ratio. And the same thing with the milk. The milk is the food for baby mammals, and it varies by species. The amount of the different things that are in the milk vary by species. And when we look at cultures, the milk, there are certain groups of people in different parts of the world who seem to have either gotten or retained the ability to continue to drink milk as adults. As they get older, they can drink milk and they have no problem with it. As I was looking this up and researching it, it's one of my interesting topics, is I was surprised that only maybe 20 or 25% of the world's population is actually able to easily use milk. And that has to do with enzymes maybe not being there, or just something to do with not being exposed to that much milk. And personally, as a descendant of European dairy farmers, my heritage, I love milk. I've been drinking it my whole life, and I can't imagine not drinking it, because again, it's got all of those things that the baby animal needs. And, you know, I hear people say, well, it's a food for a baby cow, and a baby cow grows, you know, 4 pounds a day and all these kinds of things. Well, we don't eat anywhere near as much as a baby cow or drink as much as a baby cow. So there are pluses and minuses to each thing. One of the things I don't like that's very, very common now is that they will take part of the fat out of the milk. And this is similar to taking parts out of the rice. The fat needs to be with the milk because you need fat in order to absorb your fat soluble vitamins and
milk. Well, Dr. Judy, we have to go to a quick break. So if you'll just hold on to that thought, we will come back to that fat soluble content after this break. Okay. and we are here with Dr. Judy, and we are talking about the good foods and on the topic of good fats right now that are found in milk and eggs. Dr. Judy, go ahead and continue. You were talking about those fat-soluble vitamins.
Yes. Milk as a whole contains protein, fats, vitamins, minerals, all of these things that we need. And the industry, when everybody was trying to cut out fat, we were all supposed to be on low-fat diets and everything, they decided, well, let's just skim the fat off the milk and we'll just drink skim milk. The problem with that is you no longer have the correct blend of nutrients. In order for the fat-soluble vitamins in the milk and all the other foods that you're eating to be absorbed, there has to be fat there, because those things use the same mechanisms to be absorbed as the fats. They go through with the fats. So by taking fat out of our milk, we have changed that ratio and made things worse. Basically, whole milk should be used, and we can all use our discretion on how much we're going to use, especially absolutely for children. They are growing. They need the energy. They need more fat than we do relatively on a daily basis. And so the last thing we want to do would be not let our children have whole milk. And eggs is another thing. We don't generally separate eggs. Although again, when everybody was demonizing cholesterol and demonizing eggs, they came up with this thing where they take the yolk out of the egg and they just whip up the white and say, it's great. And let's have an omelet with that. Again, probably 80%+ of the nutrients in the egg are in the yolk. Eat the eggs. The one thing we want to do with eggs for sure, we want to maximize our ability to absorb the nutrients in the eggs. And therefore, we want the yolk to be very minimally heated. It can be raw as long as we're okay. And, you know, we're sure that there is no contamination of that egg. People put raw eggs in smoothies and things like that. But when we cook eggs, we want to cook them on low heat, and we want to do something like over easy, where we're cooking the whites and we're letting the yolk be still runny. So that's the best way to do our eggs. That way we are not denaturing the cholesterol, which is one of the most important components of the egg. And just another quick thing on cholesterol. Cholesterol is the main source of our brain fats. Think about that. Your brain is mostly fat. Your nerve tissues are protected by fat, and cholesterol is one of the main components of that. Also, cholesterol is the main component of almost all of our hormones, our estrogen, our testosterone, our progesterone. All of these types of hormones are made of cholesterol. And so if we think about it, again, one of the last things we want to do is reduce our cholesterol content in our food. Even though we can make some cholesterol, we need enough cholesterol to make our brain work correctly and to make our hormones work correctly. So demonizing cholesterol, trying to lower our cholesterol artificially, they are now saying is probably one of the main causes of some of the dementias. So the last thing we want to do is limit our cholesterol using an artificial means and then start having damage to our brains to the point that we're having dementia.
Just something to think about. If you're having trouble remembering things and you're on a low fat, low cholesterol or cholesterol lowering chemical, there's a very high possibility they are linked. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes, that's what the science is starting to say. And there's abundant evidence of this. And it's something that we can go into more detail with people as we talk to them and explain what's actually happening when we lower cholesterol artificially. And also the amount of cholesterol we have in our blood relates heavily to the amount of sugar and the amount of processed food that we eat. It doesn't seem to make sense, but because of the biochemical pathways, when we eat a lot of sugar and white flour, we end up with too much cholesterol, or we have problems with cholesterol regulation. So by fixing other parts of our diet, we need to balance how much fat, how much cholesterol, and all these things we have. But one of the main functions that helps with is brain health. And remember, it is not the cause of clogged arteries in our hearts, like people thought. And we know that through pathology. We know that through actually looking at the atherosclerotic plaques in the blood vessels, that they're not made of cholesterol. But for years, they've been the highest selling drugs that we have in our country are made to artificially lower cholesterol. So it's a big, big market.
Dr. Judy, can you go into the difference between LDL and HDL?
That's one of those things that I think has really been blown out of proportion. They call them low density lipoproteins or high density lipoproteins, and that has to do with the size. But again, it doesn't relate to cholesterol going into plaque in the arteries. Really, it has to do with the molecule containing more or less cholesterol as it's being brought through the blood from one place to another. So I think that emphasis is really not where we want to be going. I know it's one of the big things the doctors look at, but probably not our best way to look at it.
All right. Thank you so much. Because I know I have people come to me and it's like, oh, my LDL is elevated and my HDL is like super low, and going over some of the things in their diet. It's like, okay, let's take our focus on making sure we're sticking with the good foods, eliminating bad foods, so that the body can actually have a balance that is supposed to be naturally occurring of this cholesterol that then supports the body as a whole.
Exactly.
Let's go into some of those bad foods that we need to be eliminating. And I know here in the United States, people are going to say, what? What am I supposed to eat when we look at these bad foods? And one thing that I love about you, Dr. Judy, is you go into not just you can't have this, you can't have this, you can't have this. You go into reasons why you don't want to have these things going into your body. So thank you so much for going through this list with me and adding some more clarity as to why we need to avoid certain foods.
There are some issues with corn and soy within our foods, and these mainly have to do with genetic engineering, that the majority of those crops are now engineered to change their composition to make them less likely to be affected by pests or things like that. But the problem is, we really don't know at this point, but we are afraid that those types of genetic engineering will not only affect the plant, but it will affect the parts of the plant that we eat. And so we caution the use of corn and soy. You know, more will be known about these things in the future. Those are just things to keep in mind. You know, the really huge thing that we all have to look at is we have to look at the sugar and the starches, which are, again, your processed foods. What happens with those is that our natural body is expected within certain times of the year to have some ripe fruits here and there, a few days, a few weeks during the year, and that's sort of a treat. But in nature, you do not find these huge amounts of sugar within the food. But the food industry has put sugar into just about everything. Rather than eating a pound or two of sugar in a year, way back in the past, to eating 150 pounds of sugar in a year per person. And the problem with sugar, again, it's supposed to be a little bit here and there, but we get accustomed to the taste of sugar and we become what you call a sugarholic thing. And I personally went through that where I started eating things that had a lot of sugar and it becomes so tasty and you just don't realize it's in everything you're eating. All your canned foods, all the packaged foods, all those things have sugar that we don't realize is in there. And we just become accustomed to that. But the nice thing about it is, and I can prove this personally, is that once you decrease your sugar consumption, you can gradually do it. And you get to the point where it's no longer a craving. It's no longer something that you need. And when you think about it, you stop doing it. You actually don't crave it anymore. I can go to a birthday party and I don't eat the cake. It's one of those things that we have to realize has happened and that we have to work on. Having some a little here and there, fine. But the idea is don't fall into that trap. A huge thing in that area is your carbonated drinks. But one of the main things about carbonated beverages, whether they're using sugar or even some artificial sweeteners, what we're finding now is that the artificial sweeteners, when they touch our tongue says, oh, sugar's coming. Let's get ready to metabolize that sugar. And then since it's artificial, there is no sugar to metabolize. So when our body's all ready to metabolize, we go out and we look for sugar elsewhere. We go eat the cookies. We go eat the cake. We go eat something sweet. And what they're showing now is that eating artificial sweeteners or drinking them in sodas makes us overeat other foods and does not work like the concept of a diet drink. They're hitting us both ways with those. And if you think about it, one of the main things that we want to do is not drink our calories. And that means anything that contains a lot of sugar and is not nutritious, because there's really nothing in one of those drinks that is nutritious for our bodies. It's just a habit. It's like a flavoring, a sweetener, a flavoring that's been put in water. And again, for the most part, drink the water. And unfortunately, even the fruit juices, when we take just the juice and we leave the pulp and we leave all the other components of the food, say for instance, orange juice, something like that, that's really not good, especially for our children either, because it's not a balanced food. So we need to be looking at drinks, water, you can add some lemon or some things like that, or we can do our milk products. They're a better balanced drink that's helping the child get their water intake and get all these other nutrients, and they're not artificially sweet.
You know, there's a lot of different additives on the market for adding to water to get people to drink more water. Overall, we're a dehydrated nation. I don't know about other countries, but I know in the United States, working with clients all day long, they're drinking maybe half of the fluids that they really should be. And then they're wondering why they're having problems with issues in the blood or blood pressure issues or low blood volume. And I understand not wanting to drink city water as it has that chlorine and stuff added to it. And then wanting to drink flavored things, juices, sodas, whatever, but they're not adding to the benefit that our body really needs.
So exactly.
I love the fact that there are options out there that we can add to our water. And then for those that are living in the city, taking a gallon jar, leaving it out on the counter uncovered helps to eliminate some of that added chlorine that's in the water. My thing though is all the fluoride that they also put in the water. So yes. Special filters and making sure that you're drinking healthy water to start, and then finding something that is going to be healthy to add to your water. And I know, Dr. Judy, you have some options that you offer. I will be referring to those options on my website, betterbythemintlife.com, where you can go to On the Air, look up Dr. Judy, and be able to check out some of the options that she recommends in adding to your water that's going to benefit your body without affecting blood sugar, without having those artificial sweeteners that throw the body off and screw up our metabolism. So sorry for interrupting, but I just wanted to add that in there because it is such an issue with drinking things that have empty calories that are not benefiting our body. And in some cases, they're being sold as electrolytes that are good for us.
Yes, absolutely. And just to clarify, a lot of the water systems throughout the world, they actually add chlorine or fluorine. And the purpose of that is to kill bacteria or things that may be contaminating the water that would give you a sickness. So what they're doing is they're adding a poison or something that is not helpful to us for the greater good, so that, you know, we don't spread all these bacterial infections and things. The point is, it's true that we don't need to spread those things, but there's abundant research again on fluorine causing lowering of IQ, causing a lot of different issues with health. We do not want fluoride in our toothpaste and those kinds of things for dental health. And I can go into a lot more detail on that. Again, if you search out my site on Becca's site, but a lot of these things are done supposedly for a better purpose, but then for the individual person, we need to filter those things out. We need to not be using them. And the other issue is these sports drinks. When people want to replenish the fluids after exercise, then there's this huge market of sports drinks. Again, they're sugar. When we sweat, we are losing all of the nutrients that are in our plasma of our blood, all of those nutrients. And we keep talking about 90 nutrients. We've got to replace those 90 nutrients. And there are drinks available that do that, but do not provide sugar and some of these other things that are not helping our bodies. So yes, we've all as a culture gotten used to flavors of things instead of just drinking water. But we need a source of water. Like I said before, you could do a little bit of lemon or something like that if you really want to do something. But I go out and do my animal chores at the barn. I have a hydrant in the barn. I'm lucky to have well water where I live. And one of the best things I do when I'm out there watering my horses is I take a drink out of the hose. I mean, I love just plain water. Get that into your mind to be thinking about how am I getting enough water? And that relates to our salt intake too. If our salt and our water go back and forth, when we add salt to something, we drink more water. We use that water to eliminate the salts through the kidneys if we have too much, but it's a delicate balance. And as we've all been taught, use less salt, we don't feel as thirsty and we don't drink as much water. The whole thing really fits together, but keep in mind, we should not be drinking sugars. We should not be using our drinking as a source of calories.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Now, let's go ahead and continue on with the list of the things that we need to ignore. I love the fact that you said ignore rather than avoid or eliminate.
Right. What I find is when I read on a topic and I understand it, like with the gluten, my mind then says, whoa, I understand why I don't want this and I don't want it. That's what happens. That's what ends up happening is when we understand what's happening, it's not as hard to look at what's good and what's bad because we don't want to harm ourselves. We just don't know what's happening. So we get to another topic, and this has to do with when we heat our meat or our fats. If we cook potatoes, make potato chips or French fries or things, those oils that are being used are heated to 400 degrees. They may be kept in a vat for days and reheated and reheated. And what happens to those oils, they are no longer the oil that was originally in the plant that they're taken out of. Even the extraction process, taking the oil from the soybean or the corn or wherever that oil is going to come from, that process inherently changes the shape of the fat, and we like to call them Frankenfats from then on. So as I was saying before about the Frankenfats in our blood that cause the atherosclerosis in our blood vessels, we don't want to be eating things that are fried because the temperature is too hot, and we really don't want to use any oils in a bottle because as soon as they're extracted, they have already become denatured. And then when they sit on the table and people add them or people put them in salads, salad dressings, these are no longer the normal fat that you would find in the original source. And so that's a big thing in some cultures where they fry everything. They fry a lot of foods. And if you track their health in these cultures that do a lot of fried foods, you find that they have a lot of these specific issues related to that. So we really don't want to be frying our foods, and we don't want to be using these oils in a bottle for salad dressings and things like that. What ties in also with that is if you're having a baked potato or a twice baked potato or something, you're getting a crispy skin on there. That's that same process where you're destroying the natural shape and function of those oils. So we don't want to be overheating things. We actually want to cook our foods ideally in things like a crock pot that never gets super hot, or we can bake things at lower temperatures. And you may have seen advertisements lately for a lot of things like air dryers. air fryers where you don't have to add cooking oils. Great concept. But we need to remember, if we're using an air fryer, we still don't want a super high temperature, because there are natural fats within the chicken or the steak or whatever we're doing. Yes, we have not added extra oil, but the original fats within those things can also be destroyed when the temperature is too hot. It's a kind of a different way of looking at our basic ways of cooking.
I'm glad that you brought up the air fryers, because I get that question a lot. Well, I'm not using bottled oils. Can I still cook my food in an air fryer? The overall answer is it's still frying the food because of those natural fats that occur in the food that you are trying to cook at very high heats. So thank you so much for bringing that up.
Yeah, the idea there is you can do things in those types of cooking, but you got to do the lower temperature ones. And most of us are thinking, oh, I want the brown skin. I want the, you know, the crispy looking end product. And that's what we are trying to avoid, because those are cancer causing changes to those fats and the meats. Those changes actually lead to cancer in the body, because the body can't handle the changes in the shapes of those natural, normal ingredients within the foods.
Those are called acrylamides. Whenever we get that crispiness or the burnt fats, it converts it to a type of acrylamide, and acrylamides have been found to cause that horrible C word. So thank you again for bringing that up also.
And also nitrates. I mean, there are a bunch of different types of molecules that happens, but it's just a basic concept that our food should not be cooked at super high temperatures. We just need to slow down, not put so much wood on the fire, basically, when we're cooking our foods.
Yeah, slow down is right, because most of the time we're cooking them because we're in a big hurry. And that includes the microwave and trying to get things done quickly, which then takes those molecules and transforms them so fast that it actually changes their nutritional value.
Yes. And more research is being done on that all the time. What are those effects? I don't think it's really clear, but it's one of those things where if you're going to reheat something, either put it, you know, steam it in a pan on the stove, low heat, or figure out a way that it's not a microwave where you can. And there's going to be more research on that. And I wouldn't be surprised at thing that we just don't recommend using them anymore. I would not be surprised about that.
And I've not been there to confirm it myself, but there are certain countries that I have heard that they are not allowed for use, referring to microwaves, because of the damage that it does to the food and the long-term effect on health. Yeah, we are learning more and more, that's for sure. What else are on the foods that we need to ignore and why?
And then, as we were talking about before, the wheat, barley, rye, and oats contain gluten. And gluten is probably the biggest issue within health right now. We heard a few things about gluten 10, 15 years ago, and then all of a sudden it's become a big thing. But I think the main thing for people to understand is that gluten always causes problems with your digestive system, and you don't necessarily feel it. A lot of people say, oh, I don't have any digestive problems, but they have all these other problems in their other tissues and organs because they're not absorbing the nutrients that they're eating and they're thinking they're getting. And so all these issues happen. So almost the first thing we will do with everybody is work on their digestive system, get them to stop eating the gluten, and then it'll take a little while for their intestines to heal. It's amazing how many things can be helped that way. Skin problems, eczema, asthma, just about anything you can think of that you're not getting all the nutrients you need for is caused by a digestive issue due to gluten. I mean, if you have celiac disease, yes, absolutely. That's the worst of it. We know that that is then a gluten issue. But you can have other things that just don't seem like they make any difference. And that's really where it goes to. Some of the other issues, fatigue, autoimmune diseases. And for the most part, a lot of autoimmune diseases are just nutrient deficiencies, and it could very well be because of problems in the digestive system due to gluten. Some other things, dizziness, hormone imbalances, fibromyalgia, a big one, inflammation, and mood. And talking about inflammation, I hear people all over talking that are not in the food or nutrition industry or anything. And they talk about, well, we now know inflammation is the number one cause of disease or problems. Well, what is the cause of inflammation? Nutrient deficiencies. Our body reacts incorrectly because it doesn't have the nutrients it needs to react correctly. It's amazing how all this ties back to digestion and nutrition, making sure we get our essential nutrients.
Well, and that's key, making sure that we get those essential nutrients. And folks, it is not in our food. And what is in our food, if we're eating a lot of things that include gluten, I mean, what does that do to the inside of the intestines, Dr. Judy, that actually prevents those nutrients from being able to be absorbed by the body?
In our small intestine, and this is where most of the nutrients in our food are absorbed, we have a huge surface area because each little molecule has to touch that and then go through one layer of cells to get into the blood. So we want the nutrients that we ate from the digestive system to go into the blood. They say that the surface area of our small intestine is the size of a football field, because we have what they call finger-like projections or villi. And then on those, we have microvilli. So you can imagine if you put your hand flat, you've got, you know, whatever the size of your palm is, that's how much absorptive surface you would have. But if you open your fingers and lift them, and then you trace along all your fingers, you are drastically increasing that surface area. And then if you put little microvilli on each one of your fingers, you're drastically increasing it again. But what gluten does is it sticks to all those little parts that are trying to absorb things, and it causes them to be shortened and broken and non-functional. So the food will just go flying by because the surface to absorb the nutrients is completely gone. So that is a huge difference in your ability to get the nutrients from the foods you eat. And that's why gluten is such a big issue. Everybody has issues with gluten. It's just how much do you eat and how much damage is being done. And the only way to fix that is to stop eating the gluten foods. Most people see a huge difference in 90 days, maybe a little longer. And those cells do grow very fast. So you will have recovery in a relatively short period of time.
Well, Dr. Judy, we are at the end of our time together. We hate to leave you on such a bad note, but the bright light at the end of the tunnel is there are things that we can do intentionally that really are simple. They might be hard when you think about it, but when you've got the right mindset and you understand why poor health is existing within your body, using the information that was shared here on today's program, we are in hope of more knowledge that helps you help yourself, be empowered, and take back your health. Dr. Judy, thank you so much again for being on Better by the Minute Live with Becca.
Thank you, Becca.
And until next time, you have been listening to Better by the Minute Live with Becca on KSCO 1080 AM Santa Cruz. Have a wonderful night.